Hey, Mac, when does deer season start?
Well, if you want the best deer herd possible, Lanny, you need to start right now.
Right now.
That's why we're starting our promotion. I mean, we've got a Deer Season Starts Now promotion on plantbiologic.com where you can pick up our Game Changer soybeans, our forage soybeans, and our spring protein peas. While you're there, you might as well go ahead and pick up some brassicas like our final forage and winter bowls.
Yeah, stock up for the cool season planting right now. Listeners to the GK Podcast, if you use coupon code GKPOD, you can save an additional 10% off our entire selection of warm season, cool season, and clover food plot seed. Get started today and visit plantbiologic.com for an unforgettable fall.
Hey, this is Mac. Checking game cameras is one of the many pleasures I get from gamekeeping. OnX helps keep track of my camera locations to be sure I'm getting the information that I need to make the best decisions for the wildlife. Try it out for yourself and see. Use coupon code MOSSYOAK to save 20% on your OnX subscriptions. Know where you stand.
Hi, I'm Jeff Foxworthy, and welcome to Gamekeeper Podcast. If you want to learn more about farming for wildlife and habitat management, then buddy, you are in the right place. Join the Gamekeeper crew direct from Mossy Oak Land Enhancement Studio as they discuss the latest wildlife and habitat management practices, news, and of course, hunting. There's no telling what you'll learn, but I'm going to tell you, I bet it's interesting. Enjoy.
We're live in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Welcome once again, everybody, to West Point, Mississippi, home of Mossy Oak Brand Camo and the Gamekeeper Studio. And for once in the last 6 weeks, it's not raining today.
Yeah, but the day ain't over yet.
It's not.
It's crazy. It's cloudy outside. I don't trust it.
No, you're absolutely right. Last night, we had a heck of a thunderstorm.
Hey, and by the way, I want to report to everybody, we found a way to get rid of army worms. It's completely environmentally safe. No chemicals or anything. We drown them. Goodness gracious.
Brim bait.
Yes. We have never seen anything like it.
I've got a 110-quart ice chest on my back porch that I put there 3 days ago, and it's all already halfway full of water.
That's crazy.
Well, let me do something I don't generally do just so we can set the stage for everybody. So looking across the table, Toxie Hayes is here with us. Sitting next to Toxie is Lanny. And he looks like he is well-rested, so he should be ready to rumble today.
I am ready to rumble, always.
And today's episode, Dudley, who's sitting next to between Lanny and myself, this is the sun is going to shine on you today, Dudley. This is
So you're saying Dudley's sitting between the turkeys. That's cool.
There's kind of a little couple of different ways that that thing makes sense there when we say that. But so we're going to talk about oak trees today and the importance of oak trees and how to identify oak trees and what oak trees are dropping at certain times.
Yeah.
So we're going to learn a lot, ask you a lot of questions.
Well, good. I talk about it all day, every day on the phone. And on email, so
I'm gonna tell you what
we're gonna shoot from the hip, and we're gonna have a good time.
My bad, Dudley. I was interrupting.
Oh, sorry.
I was just gonna brag on you a little bit, but I've never heard anybody on the phone that's as good as this is what Dudley is.
He really is.
No, it's good. No.
We have people calling from all over the country. They all have different scenarios. They all have different, you know, things that they want to do on their property, and he very calmly walks them through the whole process. And so I'm excited that everybody's going to get a little taste of that today.
You know, out there,
it's about time.
Yeah, it is.
How many episodes? It's like 55 episodes.
Yeah. This is our 60th episode.
Okay. We were talking about this. You know,
our 60th
we think
you've
been trying to
hold him down. Holding the man down.
All in the name of food plots.
Well. But it's a fun topic. So
it is.
It's an intriguing topic.
I just got to say, though, for people out there, do you hear stories about, different people? And I say it all the time. It's like if you could find what your calling is. And you all know where I'm headed now with this. Yep. But it's so cool to see it actually happen. And you look back years later and you say, you know, there was a power hand involved bringing all that together and actually seeing us through a few tough times. And, you know, did we even think we're going to do it or whatever? And now you can look back and go, wow, now I can see why all this happened and how we stumbled into him and us him. And this whole thing I became obsessed with that, you know, was just a Hail Mary pass at the time. And we stayed with it and look today. It's just such a great feeling to know that as a team and a family here, we've done things and helped people do stuff that'll be around after we're gone, you know?
Well, yeah. That's very true. It is.
It's crazy how it all works. It's like one of those 1,300-piece puzzles that we got at the beginning of COVID when we were stuck in our house. All those little pieces somehow managed to fit together.
And you,
it's almost impossible.
You see people struggle, and then they get in their groove where they are just made for in life. And it's like when you see him talk to someone about trees. And the other thing is, okay, he doesn't, like, show off all that knowledge like, you know, someone else might. Not saying that's anything necessarily wrong with that. But if you keep on listening to the questions, no matter who it is, even at the highest academic level, there's no bottom to the depth of it. It's so cool to watch that play itself out for people, because he's been so patient with so many people for so long. There is literally no telling. You want to feel like in your life you left behind a trail of what you love. I can't imagine anybody at Mossy Oak has done more of that than Dudley has, and how much he loves trees.
Wow.
Well,
big words.
Well, thank you. But I'd say you'd probably be really good at that role. I mean, we can talk for hours about the same subject. He could sit in that same seat and pretty much do the
same.
So
they told me not to ever use my word for this for myself, because I said something to Ben one time about it. At the end of the day, I'm just an oak nerd. Don't say that in public. Don't say that about yourself. But I mean, I am. I'm a nature freak, but I'm a nerd.
Yeah, I was
going to
go to nature freak.
So, I mean, Dudley gives me a great outlet for being to talk to someone else as not only an oak nerd, but a brilliant oak nerd.
Yeah, we never get bored with it.
No.
Yeah. Okay, look, let's do a few things, a little housekeeping before we get off down that rabbit hole that we're going to go down, I can tell.
There's going to be a lot of rabbit holes.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking at, on the other side of the room, we've got Richie Davenport, who's multi-talented. He's over here producing, and then Max running the board. Richie, I want to say congratulations. Last night's Gamekeeper episode was fantastic.
It really was.
And if you didn't see it, you need to make sure you try to catch the rerun. It was all about wood ducks, and it was just so, yeah, it was so educational.
Yes.
It really was a fantastic job, Richie. I want to make sure we called you out. Mac, we appreciate you being here. Have you got a commercial lined up for us?
What do you mean?
Well, usually at this point, we have a commercial.
Hey, look. Yeah,
I've got something fun to talk about. I don't know if it's a commercial.
Yeah, okay.
But,
that was awesome.
So something we got going on right now with Mossy Oak Gamekeeper's apparel, we've got a bundle with the Back 40 bundle is what it's called. And so the Back 40 is that really high performance, you know, flexible, stretchable fabric. It looks good. It feels good. It's breathable. I mean, whether you're, you know, up in the mountains, I mean, chasing elk, or you're down here in the bottoms chasing turkeys, it's really a do-all fabric. And so with this Back 40 bundle, you'll get a free Canopy high-performance fleece hoodie that says Gamekeeper. That's wow. Its value is $59.99.
Yeah, so, and it's bottomland too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it's our blood on the bottomland for sure. I mean,
sign me up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So where do they go to find that?
So you find that at gamekeeperfieldwear.com, and it's under Back 40 bundle.
And is there a promo code they put in?
No, it's already taken out for you on there.
Okay, good. Good. Well, guys, y'all check that out. We're real proud of that Gamekeeper Fieldwear.
I'm there. I may leave the podcast to beat y'all to it.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you, Mac. We appreciate that. So, and Mac, we've been proofing. We saw a television show with you catching that gator. That looked really good.
I'm surprised you let it air, but it's
no, it hasn't aired yet. Now, don't get ahead of yourself.
Right. I'm getting excited. No, it was cool. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, Richie, would that tell me if I'm wrong? Was that about 3 weeks away from airing?
That'd be two.
Two weeks away. Okay. Thank you, Richie.
Did they edit the part out where Mac cast at the gator and it went about 30 yards to the left?
No, it's there. It went 30 yards to the right.
To the right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you're the right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That was fun. No, that's good.
Yeah, don't tell too much. That's a people don't need to miss that one. That's way good. More to that than just a gator hunt.
Look, I told the guys, I think that's the best show we've ever produced down here.
Man.
I think it was really good.
That's because you love drama series.
Well, that's
and
good.
Drama novels.
It was good.
It was good.
All right, guys. Well, so let's talk about blood on the biologic. There's been a few I'm seeing that there was a guy in Mississippi that killed a giant deer that its back tines were split. The G2s were split. It was just unbelievable. Yeah. And his name was Matthew Adcock. I don't know him, but I saw it on Facebook.
What part of the state?
I really don't know. It was on Mississippi Whitetails.
You can always say, what county? And you usually don't even get an answer on that anymore.
That's true.
So I get it. But congrats. Dave, Nebraska arrowed an absolute giant.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
It just showed up. He just posted it.
Okay.
Wow.
Huge deer.
Wonder what, probably in Illinois, Ohio, somewhere.
Not sure.
He's from Ohio.
He has a history with it. He was holding up a pair of its sheds.
Oh, so, that's cool.
Cool story.
Can't wait to see that.
It's huge.
Good for him. So, Lanny, have you heard of anybody? You got anything? What about Hayden? Is he getting excited about hunting season coming up?
No, he's still focused on football right now. So, but I think with the fall wind coming up, we got to get down to a couple pieces of property, still plant some late food plots.
Let me just tell you what.
Get fired up about it.
You were at a fun stage with him.
Oh, gosh.
It's about to really get going.
Yeah, I'm at a busy stage. There's no question about that.
But you the one curse of this year, especially right now in kids, is you literally can't breathe for the mosquitoes. And it takes a little of the steam out going because we're in a pretty wet area. Even if you're in high ground around here, we got drainages all around us. Oh, it is unbearable.
Yeah, they're really bad this year.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can survive.
I agree. I hadn't seen mosquitoes this bad since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. And they're mean this time of year. They know cold weather's coming, so they're mean.
They're hungry.
So last thing that I noticed I wanted to just bring up, did anybody else see this blonde rattlesnake, the lady in South Mississippi?
I did.
Wasn't that incredible looking?
It was. Yep.
It was.
What happened? What was going on there, Dudley?
There's a snake genius or a herp genius named Terry Van Devender, if I'm pronouncing that right, that looked at the snake. And he said it was either called T-positive melanism or hypomelanism. So it's not an albino because you can see some color. But it's just this freakish looking thing. And
didn't he say one in a million type of?
I think he said one in several thousand, but it's like a white turkey. I mean, that's easier for predators to kill,
right?
Because it's so noticeable.
But what I did read the story, it was cool that they actually captured it safely, carefully, and gave it to the natural museum or whatever in Jackson, the wildlife museum. And they had just lost the one timber rattler they had. So this was one. And they said it was just real lethargic and calm.
Really?
Didn't try to strike anybody.
Hadn't even rattled yet.
That's right.
No. They lost him or something happened.
lost him like you lost a family member or whatever.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. I would just, if they lost it in the building, it'd be a lot to worry about.
That's funny. I was late this morning, but I heard that we had a king snake appearance at Bible study this morning.
Yeah, sure enough.
Sure
it was
did.
About 12, 14 inches long. Lanny caught him, saved the day, and Lanny just had to run out of room. I think his bookie called him once more. He's always, how this time of year with football games going on. So, look, why don't we, to keep this thing rolling, why don't we open it up, Dudley? Yeah. Could you talk about how important oaks are to wildlife? So as a gamekeeper, what a guy needs to think about on his property and having a diversity of oaks and when they drop, they don't drop at different times of the season. Would you kind of go into all that? But really key in, first off, on the importance of oaks to wildlife.
Yeah, well, we were kind of arguing this topic before we hit record. And I'll be the first to say that there's places where there aren't oaks and everything gets along just great. But you can go to one region and they're real important. You can go to this huge grassland area or something where there's not any and, deer still get big and all that stuff. But they're incredibly important. And it's not just the time of year that they're dropping mast. There's a scientist or biologist or entomologist called, I think his name's Doug Tallamy, and there's a called the Tallamy Index. Oaks house more insects. I think he was referencing lepidopterans, which is like moths and butterflies. Oaks house more insects than just about any other tree species. So I don't want this podcast to get too deer centric. They're important for so many other types of wildlife out there. But, you know, as far as deer are concerned, I can't think of anywhere I'd rather be hunting near in October and November. You know, it's about to get cold. Their rut's about to happen. They want to build up all their fats so they can get through the rut. You know, there's a lot of people that like putting corn and feed out. Well, you know, acorns are loaded in way more carbs, way more fat than corn.
Yep.
What oaks drop first?
In our neck of the woods, which I would say, you know, the southern half of the U.S. and, you know, Texas and east, the first ones to drop are your small acorn reds like water oaks and willow oaks. You start getting into the Appalachians, you've got one in the white section called chestnut oak that drops really early, but it's oftentimes overlooked for whatever reason.
By wildlife.
Yeah, true. They don't really seem Duran, to hit on
but
it.
We don't, Duran will too, but they're, yeah. They look like, honestly, they I tell people to recognize the Duran oak. They're kind of only in the prairies of the south, I guess.
It's really uncommon except in.
But we have them everywhere around here, and it's like it looks like a water oak, and you think it's a water oak, and the acorn almost looks like a water oak. But then it's got that beautiful white scaly bark.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's a white oak.
It's so. In the white section.
Yep.
But those are your early ones.
Sometimes overcuts, which they don't like as much.
Correct. And what we like doing is we like finding the oddballs.
Yes.
So, you know, some of the stuff we offer, we may have something that drops earlier, that like a white oak that may drop earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to get or you gotta put your boots on and walk around and late. Find that.
Honestly, I think the earliest, the most valuable would prop for hunting purposes, you know, whether you planted it and waited 10 or 15 years or you found it more likely now, is the earliest or the latest.
Yeah.
Because particularly around here in all these wetlands, the nutalls will not drop until like December, which is the only thing left
pretty much
during the rut. And you get big areas of nothing, almost a monoculture of just nutalls. And, I mean, deer are migrating to them from a mile away.
Yeah, I'm a huge nutall fan. And that's, you know, that's late. That's the opposite end of the spectrum. But my little selling point, and I think our customers have heard this a million times, but when your food plots look like a putting green, nutalls are just starting to drop.
That's right.
And that nutall is a pretty big acorn, isn't it?
Yeah, but they vary. But yeah, it's not a swamp chestnut too big of an acorn.
But it's not a water oak size either.
No, it's not that small.
Yeah, I'd call it a medium.
Yeah, and turkeys could still eat it.
And it's neat how they vary. You know, some of the acorns look like a football. They've got that elliptical shape.
Long, like cut off the end of your little finger almost.
And then some of them are real squat and round.
You know, he brings up a good point. You say, what's the earliest acorn too? And we've said forever. And this goes, you know, representing everything we ever sell. Each individual tree is its own snowflake genetically, and maybe all water oaks, but they all tend to be a little different. You know, they're closely similar, but I can remember growing up hunting at the Cottrell Lake Hunting Club we had, and there was one big, you know, regular, you know, alba white oak, regular white oak. As the foresters call them, lacy leaf white oaks around here. And it was on, you know, it dropped starting in September, and at the 1st of October, mostly in every single year, it was just matted with deer poop, eating acorns, and it was deer. I mean, it was a guaranteed, you know, if you didn't mess it up, it was a guaranteed, you know, great hunt, first time or two you hunted in bow season. But it was just a regular white oak and different. You know, Dullican, we've studied him for so long, he knows way more than me, but just certain trees that we have here exhibit that. And it's not a soil or a weather phenomenon, because they'll do it every year.
Right.
So I've seen nutalls, there's some falling right now.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'll have trees that they'll stick tight to until January. Almost January.
Yeah. Right. Another late one is Shumard oak.
Yes. But there's some, I found some. I got out this week when there were some starting to fall.
Yeah, Shumard varies a lot more from tree to tree. Yeah. You know, you may plant 20 of them and half of them drop in usually late October. And then some of them, I don't know what it is. It has some, I think the acorn is actually mature and ready to fall, but that cup tends to hold on to them.
Right.
And yep. Storms and freeze and thaw will kick them out. But I had one at my farm before the tornado came that was like clockwork.
Wow.
You know, it started in late December. Didn't drop a single one. So,
but you know, deer and wildlife in the Southeast especially, but in a lot of the country, have been just, you know, the things and the habits that they have today were just ingrained over time. And so much of the Southeast especially, but other parts, especially if it's not a lot of ag in particular, but are acorn-driven deer herds and wildlife. The biggest shift, unfortunately, in that has been the wild hog.
Yeah.
Typically, the best place to find turkeys in the early spring was remnant. You know, in the hardwoods were remnant, like a lot of those water oaks and willows last. And they last. They don't go bad as quick either. I actually, last year's the first time we got a place in Alabama that I love. And it has a lot of willow oaks on it. And we also have a lot of hogs, so I didn't even think about it. But I killed a turkey with my buddy Rodney Johnson. And it was the 20-something of April. And the crawl was full of willow oak acorns still.
Wow.
And I was like, I can't believe they survived the hogs this long. But where, you know, maybe 200 yards from where that was, he stepped out in a road there. But it was willow oak acorns.
Wow.
In April.
The red oaks have more tannins. The white oaks sprout. They try to sprout when they land on the ground. And they're also deer and everything else usually hit those first and eat them all. But those red oaks will sit under the leaves, not normally. They don't normally just go straight to them. Of course, there'll be random trees that they just absolutely love. But the beauty of red oaks is they get rained on. They sit on in those wet bottoms, and those tannins eventually kind of leach out of them and make some more palatable.
Well, when they get hungry, I mean, they're just as nutritious. There's no difference in that, you know.
So right.
Once they eat what may be tastiest, then there's more for them. Because a lot of, you know, we don't have to survive the winter issues that the, you know, far northern climates have, but it's still a barren time of year for food, and anything that has held up good through the winter, just like ducks. I mean, the native seeds and grasses hold up better than anything underwater. Those acorns hold up, and those red oaks, small red oak acorns, hold up better than anything.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Lanny's got a question.
Good luck. Good luck.
So help everybody understand about tannins. Is it more tannins better? Less tannins better? How that affects the taste? Because, I mean,
now what is tannin?
Yeah, what is tannins? You know, I know I've heard it in the use of wines and all other kinds
of tannic
stuff.
Acid.
So tannic acid. Sure, so does the white oak have less tannic acid, therefore it's tastier, or more?
It does. And
so it's the less the tannic acid, the sweeter the acorn?
Theoretically. I don't know if I go by a lot of that stuff. But yes. We were also talking about making acorn flour just for the heck of it.
Sure.
And those tannins are kind of what makes that acorn last.
Mm-hmm.
But I've bow hunted before watching deer just pound a southern red oak that was dropping that's supposedly super high in tannins, and watching them walk right past, you know, white oaks to get to it.
Well, we know they're selective, what they need.
I don't think I always want to answer that kind of question with what I read in these scientific publications.
Yeah, wouldn't you say it's more, it is true, but it's more of a generality?
Yeah.
Because I don't know if they adapt to that flavor and then they don't mind it as much, or it's just so sweet that they prefer them. Yeah,
that's what I was waiting at.
Well, it's not 100% all whites, all reds.
But right. Yeah, generally, those tannins, you can taste them yourself.
Oh, yeah, we'll taste them around here.
But it's interesting for sure. And I don't think it's as cut and dry is what you always read about mm-hmm. about tannins.
So let me ask this. Lanny brings up a point. It's got me thinking about this. How many species are there that we're dealing with here in the United States? Let's just talk about, because I read there's like even more in Mexico than there is here.
I think there's about 90 in the States.
And how would that, then they would fall, they're either red or white?
Yeah, so the taxonomic section or group, people mistakenly refer to it as a family, the white oak family. Well, the oaks are all in the same family. The same family as beech and chestnut, Fagaceae. So the red section is called erythrobalanus, and the white section is called leucobalanus. White oaks will flower and make an acorn in one growing season. So in turkey season, when you see those long things hanging down called catkins that make the pollen, about a week later, a female flower forms, and then it pollinates it. But a red oak does the exact same thing, but that acorn will kind of sit there on the branch for a whole year, and it won't mature and drop until the second year. But what people don't understand, people say red oaks drop every other year. They flower and make acorns every year. It just takes 2 years for it to drop.
So some literally do drop every year. It's just that acorn was formed over a two-year span instead of a one-year span.
So my buddy Ryan Russell refers to them as acornets. So the first year, it's a little acornet, and the second year, it's a big acorn that drops. But you've got acornets and big acorns on the tree every year.
At the same time.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But one thing I would say for sure, don't overlook, because I'm guilty of it in the past, scouting. And we're just talking about what's existing right now. We haven't even gotten to all the things you can do with your own place and planting them, which we need to. But don't overlook a productive tree. There's also something about one, and I don't know if this has anything to do with how we understand biology, but Dudley might could explain it. But when a particular tree first starts dropping prolifically, maybe it dribbles an acorn or two, but then the first couple of days that it actually starts dropping pretty steadily, enough to get a half a belly full for a deer, it's something about those first acorns that are more attractive to a deer. And I don't know if it's an instinct to move on to some other food for safety or what, but you go to a place where they've been just falling out for a long time, and it didn't seem to be like the quote-unquote hot tree. I don't know why that is, but what I was getting at, many times it's a water oak around here, honestly.
Yeah, no question.
You know, and whether it's got the tannic acid in it or not, they'll go to them. And
it's pretty rank around here this time of year too, though, you know, so they're probably pretty hungry looking for some stuff.
Oh, sure.
So when I take a pocket knife and cut open a water oak, it's like orange, like a pumpkin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was a kid, I called it squirrel cheese.
That's a great name for it.
So, but the red oak and the white oak acorns they're a different color. The meat's much lighter, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a couple outliers, like Schumard oak has a real pretty white meat.
So the definition has nothing to do with like the red wood might be wet red, mm-hmm. or there is a white bark on most white, but not all white oaks.
No.
The definition is scientifically is like 1 year. Or 2 years. In
right.
Production.
And then another identifying feature is the red oaks have what are called bristle tips.
Right.
They have pointed lobes on the leaves or what looks like a tiny little thorn on the end of the points.
Right.
Whereas whites don't have that.
Right. Rounded lobes.
There's exceptions to that too. Like
not many. But in general, if an average person doesn't know any better and is walking through woods, the quickest way, if it's really, really white bark, it's likely a white oak. But the rounded lobe on your lobe leaves versus a pointed lobe will immediately tell you.
Yeah, and another interesting note is, reds can't hybridize with whites and vice versa.
Yep.
But even isn't it technically a black oak, not a red oak family?
Some people call it black oak. Some people call it red oak.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Right, but a black oak is a variety of red oaks.
Yes.
Right.
And a white oak's a variety of white oaks.
That's the confusing thing because that's right. There's a whole, you know, a whole classification of many, many hundreds, at least, I guess, of white oaks.
That's why common names are overrated.
Yes.
So it's I've heard you mention the northern red oak.
Yeah.
And there's a southern red oak as well.
Yes.
And is it easily distinguishable for someone with your skills?
People up north just refer to them as red oaks. And in the south, where we have a million different oak species, we call them northern red oaks.
And in there, there's another argument that the southern red oak, some people are trying to say a southern red oak and a cherry bark are actually the same species, which I, you know, I mean, it's just all a scientific opinion. Cherry, I say they're distinctly different, but I really can tell you there's
I think about 20 years ago, it was, the scientific name was changed. It used to be Quercus falcata for both of them. And cherry bark was Quercus falcata variety. I can't remember.
Cherry bark.
Somebody's name.
Pagoda folia.
Mac, you better get on the fact-checking thing over here, Mac.
Hey, he's right on that stuff. You don't have to fact-check.
It was, I want to say it was actually a somewhat famous forester in Vicksburg who helped get that differentiation done.
If you come to a Quercus debate with Dudley, then you have come to a gun shoot with a water pistol.
That's right.
Yeah. Mr. Burkhart, who died a few years ago, great man. He actually cruised some timber at my farm in his 80s.
Right.
Helped get that name change done.
But this is a psychology question for you and I, Dudley, but why do we get so fascinated with the hybrids? I know I did, but I don't know that I could put
it's
my
something
finger on
different.
It. Yeah, I guess you want something unique, and you've seen there's at least a higher potential of it being better timber form, better wildlife, more precocious, which means dropping them at an early age. But there's something about discovery. I feel like discovered something, you know, when we find one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it, like you said, it's the uniqueness of it. When I can't have something,
right.
I want to have it more.
Right.
So
there's some psychology there.
It's just a challenge. Yeah. So I just like riding around and
looking for them. It's fine.
Not driving, but
right.
When you're going down roads, it's fun to look at the water oaks and see if you can see one with pointy leaves.
That's,
when I'm walking around on a campus, I'm always. I don't know.
There's more.
I can't walk by a tree without identifying it in my mind.
One thing we learned for sure.
And I'm always looking for weirdos.
It varies everywhere. And at first we thought, well, we're in an area where there's more of them. But it occurs more than people think. And, of course, and I get asked because I guess people know I love trees. We wouldn't have the nursery. But how did you know that was a this or that? I mean, I remember the one in a, won't call any name, friend of ours' backyard that was pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you find that? Well, it was actually at night, and I was going over to pick up a generator to take to a tailgate deal. But I saw the lights in my truck, and I was like, how did you know that? Well, if you halfway know the common species that are in the state, and there's really not all that many, globally speaking. If you know that already, when you see something that doesn't make any sense at all, and you start asking questions. That's how I found most of them. It's like, wait a minute. There's nothing like that, you know, right now.
Right. You have to know what the real species all look like. And once you get that nailed down, you can detect the subtle differences.
And then, you know, Dudley also made me think back far enough to realize, too, is if you found a particular property that has seemed to be more than there should be, then likely a generation ago was a parent that had offspring.
Right. Or maybe even one theory I have is there was a big disturbance. So a tornado or a cutover. That's when all these seedlings that have been sitting in the understory had a chance to grow up and become mature.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes that first and second generation hybrid oak is going to have that hybrid vigor.
Right.
What's the word for that?
Bigger.
Heterosis.
Heterosis.
You said it a few weeks ago.
Yes, heterosis.
But they usually end up winning the race to the top of the canopy because they have that hybrid vigor. And so
It just happens sometimes. It's not every time. But we have seen for sure a higher predisposition of that with the hybrid varieties. No question about that either.
How many of these snowflake hybrids have y'all found?
Well, I don't call them snowflake, but a bunch.
Yeah.
You mean varieties or individual trees?
Individual trees.
Oh, gosh. I know of 40, 50 that I've come across myself probably.
Probably more than that.
Yeah, but I mean, like a lot of them, one of my places, like the Dallas place, was they, CRP cropland they planted in acorns like 35 years ago. Well, none of those are just coming off to where there's much mass to speak of anyway, because they're, you know, they planted them too tight and it's crowded and they hadn't canopied good. But, it's, you know, it's coming on good. But I've noticed probably half a dozen or eight, and they're all red oaks of some different, you know, hybrids. Doesn't mean we can use them here to this point yet. But
so if they're 35 years old, wouldn't they? How long does it take a tree to start making acorns?
Just depends.
Look, there's so many variables.
I would think 35 years was enough time.
There's genetics.
I love that question.
The soil. There's so many different things. I mean, is it sitting out in sunlight with no competition? Is it stuck in the middle of the woods?
Can't tell you how many times I've had folks call on the phone and say, well, I'm buying these for my kids and grandkids because I'll never see them make an acorn. And
you'd be surprised.
I'm like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Go to a city park where a tree was planted out in the open.
Absolutely. It's a great.
And where it was maintained properly.
Irrigated, fertilized. Yeah. No sunlight, no competition.
And then I can't tell you how many trees I've collected from that I can get my two hands and reach around the tree and it'd be covered in seed.
That's right.
But a textbook will tell you an average of 25 years.
But that's not true.
That is an acorn falling out of a tree in the woods, becoming a seedling, a couple trees next to it fall down, and it finally gets some sunlight, and it slowly makes its way to the canopy.
Yeah, no,
that's 25 years.
And in some of those cases, it could be more than that.
Yeah.
So what he's saying, I can remember when we first started that one of my dad's best friends, he's gone now, is Mr. Ralph Weems. He lived out on the prairie and had planted some oak trees in his yard up there. And he brought a bucket of acorns in. They were big, beautiful Shumards. And I said, I didn't know. I thought he had pecan trees in his yard. Well, he planted one and I went over there and it wasn't very big. You couldn't get your hand around it, but it wasn't far from it. He said, I know for a fact that I planted that. It was a 3 foot tall tree when he planted it. And he said, that's 9 years old, but it was out in the yard. They irrigated, watered, fertilized it. And So maybe it was a year old or two when he planted it. So at a minimum, it was maybe a 8 or 10 year old tree, just raining.
Right.
And it was nothing special about it. In fact, I wouldn't think they're probably a little earlier than some, but it's just a Shumard oak.
Sure. Stresses will do it. Those really expensive bald and burlap trees that like cities and universities will buy to plant on campus and whatnot.
Right.
I think the stress from cutting all the roots when they dig them up will do the same. It'll trigger them into making seed.
Yeah.
Just different things like that. I mean, you know how pine trees do. This is getting a little off subject, but you have a really droughty year. And the next year, those pine trees are just completely covered in cones. Well, it thinks it's going to die, so it reproduces.
I remember the year of the 2002-03. We had the drought of my lifetime, and there were just mature trees up and down the side of the roads dying. I mean, especially over into like western or southern Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd see just grown trees dead because of the drought. That takes a lot of drought. And a lot of the fruit trees that year and even some of the other trees put on so much fruit that the limbs broke. And some of them even got damaged beyond repair. But they were reacting to,
stress.
And they say, I mean, Dudley can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but it's a reaction to survival of the species type of thing. It got damaged or it feels threatened, so it's putting off a bunch of seed. And almost to the point of, knocking the tree back, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure there's some science behind that.
It's crazy. You've told me before to try. I think you said it doesn't always work, but you can actually kind of damage your persimmon just a little bit, and sometimes it'll trigger putting on more fruit. I'm not trying to get people to hurt their persimmons, but isn't there something to that?
That's been some lore in the hunting industry for as long as I've been around.
Somebody that used to work here was talking about building a treehouse, and we're getting off subject again, mm-hmm. but he's talking about building a treehouse and a big old male persimmon and driving all those nails and stuff mm-hmm. into it, tricked it into becoming a female. We can talk about, you know, fertilization in oak trees. There's been some studies, a lot of them out of UT, where, you know, folks used to always want to go in and fertilize their favorite oak trees and try to make them produce more. And those studies more or less prove that theory wrong. And it makes a lot of sense. And you'll have the argument of, well, this, you know, on the golf course where it always gets fertilized, you see them dumping a million acorns, but these guys actually fertilized trees. They didn't fertilize trees. They, for several years, counted all the acorns that fell out of them. And they proved that fertilization cannot increase the number of acorns that drop from a tree. According to the same similar, you know, that same group of folks, it doesn't affect the taste either. And they have numbers, you know, protein compared to protein, total digestible fiber compared to fiber, phosphorus compared to it. All the numbers are incredibly similar. But I also think it's kind of inefficient to be walking around fertilizing all your mature trees when you need to be spending, you know, fertilizing your food plots, things like that.
You think there's something to doing a soil test?
Possibly.
And then if you're deficient in something, that you could add that and be conscious of that. I know just randomly fertilize it, because I have seen where we cleared, like when you bought a place, cleared for a food plot and left like the oak trees that are there. And it's not obviously just a fertilizer thing too, but with no competition and plenty of fertilizer, you know, everything it needs, they became incredibly productive. And I guess that's just a healthier tree. And, you know, you got to have sunlight too. If you just fertilize a tree, you know, if you're even going to have a chance for it to work, it'd have to be a tree with a big canopy that didn't have a lot of competition. Right. If it's just a straight timber form tree in the middle of a, you know, hardwood stand, you're not going to, what's there to produce?
Right. And what they found was by far more important was, one, getting rid of the individual trees that aren't heavy producers. Yes. So less than half of the oaks in a stand will produce more than half of the tonnage of acorns.
Right.
And some of those trees, they may be good timber, they may grow fast, but you know, they hardly ever produce acorns. So the answer is to get rid of the ones that aren't heavy producers, and give more root space and more sunlight space to the ones that are.
Right.
You know, you can fertilize a tree and make it grow a lot faster mm-hmm. and make it produce at a younger age. Mm-hmm. You can't argue with that. I've seen people say, well, I read about those studies and I'm not going to fertilize my oaks anymore because it doesn't make them more productive. Well, you can absolutely fertilize a younger oak and make it grow faster so it can produce at a younger age.
Canopy. Certain trees are spending all their energy growing. Mm-hmm. And when they're spending all their energy growing, they're probably not as likely to throw off, you know, whatever seed.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of vegetative growth.
So maybe there's a case for if you have something that, you know, fertilizing and it's not putting off acorns, well, you're making it grow. At some point, you may have a better mass-producing tree. But don't expect – what you're telling people, don't expect to go fertilize it and see it that year. For sure, they've proven that not to be necessarily the case.
Yeah.
That could be – it does produce a lot, and it probably was going to anyway.
Yeah. Hmm.
And maybe or maybe not, they taste better. Who knows about that?
But specifically, statistically, thinning and finding out what your better trees are and thinning the bad ones out is way better than any fertilization.
Give it some room. I mean.
For sure. But my answer to the, you know, it doesn't make them taste better. I'm not sold on that. I don't necessarily think the numbers, a deer's brain and their, you know, you've said this before, and their the connection of their stomach, I don't think you can run numbers on that.
No.
I think a deer can taste something, and I don't, that just kind of defies the science, in my opinion, of, or our understanding of it.
Yeah, because, I mean, just they have to do a chemical study of what clearly was before and after on that tree in the nutrients of the acre. You know, is it better for a deer? I think when deer eat something that's better for them, in almost all cases, they're going to crave it.
Right.
So you just don't know.
One thing I know for a fact in our seed beds at the nursery, you know, where we're planting acorns in a little pot,
right?
The trees that are fertilized, that come from like our seed orchards or areas that are fertilized, they always grow faster in that first year than the acorns that we collect from unfertilized wild trees.
That makes sense.
Yep.
They seem to have a little bit more stored energy.
How about that? But that makes a lot of sense. It also leads me to what, thinking about existing stands of timber and some of the questions you talk about, even more important question to us here and questions for Dudley is like, let's talk about planting. Because the reason I want to make that connection here is because in your own stands that you're managing, if you own some or you're responsible for some, a really important word is diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we would also say, and what we would recommend to people in the really fun stuff is the being able to create, you know, as a wildlife person, biologist, landowner, gamekeeper. And so when you plant that tree, you're able willing to create and put something there that's going to be there, hopefully, past your lifetime.
Right.
And in doing so, it's so important that we talk about diversity and not like some kind of like, oh, that's the hot tree deer like, I'm going to plant that. That's great, but I would just throw this out there. My recommendation to people that are really serious about doing something for their property, I mean, if you're younger, oh, my gosh, you'll have a bunch of years to enjoy it. If not, hey, just you're not just doing something maybe your kids will enjoy if you don't, but you're adding more value to your property. Whether you decide you're going to sell it or not, you're going to add so much more value to it. But what I would recommend is think about that space just like you would like building a house for someone or planting like some kind of food plot. Think about the diversity that something's going on within that planted area from, in our world, you could do like late August through January.
Maybe
stretch it out even more. We could almost just about guarantee you down the road that something's going on from August through, you know, late winter even.
And what a
wildlife draw you would build there for someone down the road if you think through that diversity. Nobody could help you with that more than Dudley because he also knows what we grow and the tendencies of what we grow.
Yeah, if you get out of the oak realm, if you mix in fruits.
Yes. Or chestnut or some others.
Yeah, you can go basically from – you know, early September, or even no. I mean, you can almost August. Go year round. You can, I would say the month of April may be the only month. I mean, nuttalls and shoemards will hang on the tree until March, and you've got mulberries producing and dropping in mid May.
Yeah.
So basically, the month of April could be the only mastless. Massless.
And you know why I know that? Because we would literally sell a million of them, and we probably sell them all to people at Mossy Oak because that's the year, that's the month of the wild turkey almost universally is April. Mm-hmm. And if you could have something that prolifically dropped food in April, I've said like where's the chufa tree out there somewhere?
Yeah. I don't think you have to worry about April because even more important than acorns is bugs. All those herbaceous weeds that are popping up everywhere.
Yeah. Bugs.
Insects. Little buds on the end of branches that are leafing out. Stuff eats the heck out of that. Squirrels, turkeys.
Yes.
So there's you don't really have to worry about that much.
So, you know, it goes back to the same thing, though. You think about turkeys and planting trees and managing your place. Diversity. I mean, you need to have those trees. You need some mature trees, but you need some sunlight on the ground, too.
Right. And back, kind of rewinding on that, the typical question I get is somebody will call and they'll say, 100. I want 100 of this. I want 100 white oak.
Yeah.
And I usually try to talk folks out of doing it.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a salesman, but my answer to that is, do you really think you can handle managing 100 trees? You know, why not? This sounds crazy, but why not get 20 this year and get 20 tree tubes, and then next year get 20 trees?
Right.
But you should mix it up. You know,
yes.
Why don't you get five Schumards, five white oaks, five nut alls?
Biodiversity. Hey, lean hard towards the white oaks. That's fine, but don't go just all my. You know, I use overused words, a monoculture. It's just right. Not in your best interest there.
No, that's not what it's intended to be anyway.
And another thing I see, a big change. We all love white-tailed deer, and we all love oak trees and food plots. But I see people kind of getting away from that.
Tree plot.
Well, obsessing about managing for deer.
Right.
We're getting more into the birds and the bees and
good stuff.
Rabbits
awesome.
And squirrels and not being so deer-centric with everything. But it still works.
Yeah, I think the great – and honestly, the best gift we can give people by having a nursery, by offering Dudley to the world out there and growing trees and – is just when you can, it becomes one of your favorite hobbies to plant trees every year. And I mean, I see more and more, because one of my favorite things I would give for Christmas presents to some of our people that are close here and been close to us and done a lot for the company over the years, I'd send them some trees from the nursery. It's kind of my signature thing. And I get the pictures back. Mark Drury, back when she was little, he'd be planting with his daughter. We sent some to Kevin Van Dam. He was just so elated. He was planting them with his family. You know, there's so much more that you can give yourself as a gift by letting it become one of your hobbies. And it's just so hard. We've obviously done a lot of that now with the growth of the business and the connection we've made with people. And, you know, it starts with having a great, great, great product, which Dudley and the company grows. But people have trained themselves. And have gotten in the habit, instead of thinking about, to your point, just, I got to do something. It's September. I got to do something to pour it out on the ground or plant it or something to shoot a deer over. They broaden it to where they enjoy doing stuff with the place. And once you look back and, you know, I just wish I'd have done more 5 years ago and 10 years ago, because it's incredible what's happened with the stuff I have planted. So if we do anything, it's even a bigger gift than going and hunting over it. It's like, get in the habit of adding back to nature with some trees.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be there. I mean, who knows, to the rest of the time on earth. Because if that tree dies, it's probably produced offspring. And here we go. You know, if you leave something behind, like my dad said, you know. I just hope we, you know, more and more people all the time, I just try to get them into that habit. If they just plant a few. You know, he said a guy wanted to plant 100 and he talked him out of it to 20. Well, if you can plant 100 and come back and plant 100 next year and then the next, sure, if you can manage all that. But I think his point was don't plant more than you manage, but plant something.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, I mean, a lot of people wait till spring to plant. You know, the seedlings that are available today are easily planted in the fall.
Oh, yeah.
I think we believe fall is a better time to plant our specific seedlings.
Containerized seedlings. A lot of folks have all the bare root stuff ingrained in their minds that you've got to plant them in the south in the dead of winter, like February, and folks up north have to plant them in the spring. And these are, I would call it a jumbo plug in in the nursery world. It's an air prune containerized seedling. And I would say in the north, the best time to plant those trees are at peak fall color and when the leaves are dropping.
That's the time to plant.
And that gives them time to root in before the winter hits. You may have to water them a couple times if the fall and winter rains hadn't kicked in. But the beauty of it is that tree is going to have time to root in the fall and a little bit over the winter. And when that next drought hits in the summer, it's probably going to have twice as many roots as it was if you had waited until the spring to plant.
Yeah. Yeah. So and, to your point, just getting everybody to plant in the fall too.
Yeah, at the right time. With these trees, you have so much more flexibility.
And the window is much wider. Yes. In the South, my favorite time to plant is in December.
Yep.
December through February. If you have access to water, and you kind of, if it's like in your backyard, you have a big backyard, you can pretty much plant year round. Mm-hmm. The ground isn't frozen.
So you've got some YouTube videos that show people how to plant because you've got some specific ways that you found makes it more successful, right?
Yeah.
And absolutely. To find those, they would go to Native Nurseries and then that would be the YouTube videos will be listed there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a section there, tree knowledge
section. It's really, really good.
Yeah, yeah. I would encourage people to go find that.
Some of them are a little dated, I'll admit, and we need to go back and do some more. If McElwain will ever get off of COVID leave. If you
like me. Oh, there he is.
Well, you know, speaking of McElwain, I saw him hauling his boat around the other day. So the COVID.
COVID's not too bad on him, is it?
No, it is not.
I still think you need to check, see if he plagiarized that letter.
That letter was very suspicious.
You just gave a lot of people that have good paying jobs an excuse to get out of work for bow season. Yeah.
Well, look, plant some trees when you're out there.
Yeah. Dudley, talk to us about site selection.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of folks will call in and they've already decided what tree they want. And then I have to ask, well, describe, first off, tell me where you are and then describe the site that you have, you know. Not everybody live in the Midwest where it's nothing but a huge field.
Right.
And so you're limited. It may just be logging decks. It may be a treeless area on a ridgetop that the loggers cleared out, or maybe corners and edges of food plots that are down in a river bottom. And so the best example I have of this is some of those areas that Mr. Fox planted on the Gatlin place with Schumard a long time ago. They're all getting these fungal spots on the leaves. They typically prefer areas that are, you know, lower and middle slopes, and drier conditions, and they'll grow like a weed forever. But once they get a little bit older, things start changing, you know, and they don't just 100% love the soil type they're in. It's really humid down there, and they start developing problems. So it's really important, kind of like your fly fishing, you match the hatch. You need to match the hatch with where you're planting your trees as well.
I've said that so many times, is that, and the key is talking to Dudley or finding somebody to develop what your soil type likes or what trees like your soil type. But if you put a tree in a soil it likes, man, everything seems to work in your favor, even if you screw it up. But if you're trying to make one grow in a site or a soil type it doesn't like, you just about can't pull it off. I mean, it's just it's so critical.
So, I've heard y'all talk up. Y'all got a little cliche that y'all say that really makes it make sense to me. And y'all talk about the top of the hill versus the bottom of the hill.
Well,
is that what we're talking about?
Well, it could be top of the hills are different. They're all made the same, you know.
So. And then the further north you go, aspect is very even more important. So the north facing side that doesn't get that just intense sunlight is oftentimes a better site. So you can cheat a little bit. The cove sites, it's like a on the side of a hill with a drainage in it where a lot of soil has accumulated over the years.
Right.
And that's a jam up spot. Just about anything will grow there.
Well, there's not a lot of real vigorous and high pH soils. There are not a lot of, I would say, less than 10% of oaks like a high pH, maybe a little more. But there's some that do okay there. But you better know. So if you plant, you know, something loves acid soil in a high pH, you know, it's got an 8+ pH or something, it's going to die.
Right.
It's going to never make
anything. And then if you plant a slower growing species on a really productive site, it's probably going to get out-competed by other trees in time. Mm-hmm. So it's not always about how fast or slow they grow. It's about how well they compete with their all their cohorts on that site.
Yeah, and a good if you know, look at the videos and everybody can talk to Dudley or whatever, but look what's growing in your area already.
There you go.
And there's a hint at least. You know, maybe you want to try something new, and maybe it'd be great to try something, introduce a kind of new great oak to your area. That's all good, but you better kind of do your homework on the soil before you plant them.
Mm. Indicator species. So that's what, and Dudley can talk about that, but that'll tell you some certain things about your site and give you a better knowledge of
all these poorly drained clays and stuff down in these river bottoms. You can move 10 feet to the right and just see a tiny little hump on the ground.
The whole world changes.
Yeah, just like somebody did a study. I can't remember who, but even 4 inches difference in elevation can be the difference between a tree living to be 80 years old and a tree sprouting and dying within 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I believe it. You see it. I mean, you can just watch the species. Sure. Yeah. And there are just only a few little species around here that can survive, you know, Overcup, Nuttall are two of the most famous for that. But it literally is less than a foot, maybe 4 to 6 inches difference. And it's holding water versus draining, mm-hmm. you know.
So let me ask this question. So we've just kind of gone down several different rabbit holes.
But, we didn't got started.
But there's a tree around here. When I moved here 25 years ago, it was just I remember hearing folks, bow hunters, just, well, look, I found a swamp chestnut, and it's mm-hmm. just raining. It looks like they're about the size of a golf ball. Mm-hmm. Is that down this part of Mississippi, or is it over in Georgia and the Carolinas, or with those size acorns?
Yeah, it's. All pretty much all of the Southeast, and I want to say it gets up into Illinois and Indiana and, you know, some of those river bottoms.
And what is that tree called? Am I saying it right?
Swamp chestnut oak.
Yeah.
Some people call it cow oak or basket oak. It's, people used to make baskets out of it.
But it's not a chestnut variety.
But yeah, it's in the white oak family, it drops every year.
Yes. And if I remember right, Dudley, correct me, not a lot of studies been done on the nutritional content of different acorns. I know that I saw one abstract study like 15 years ago, and protein content was highest in like a Durand, and actually deer like those. But the swamp chestnut had the highest fat content.
Mm. How do you spell Durand?
D-U-R-A-N-D. That's a smaller acorn. But the swamp chestnut, the golf ball, the cow oak was, I mean, literally – most people will tell you they prefer it over corn or anything. Mm-hmm.
And they drop usually a little bit after Quercus alba white oak drops. So, you know, if you're hunting, you focus on the white oaks first. And then a couple weeks later, you move into the bottoms and go to the swamp chestnut.
We have so many around here, if you scouted, which I don't get time to do much anymore, and you could find an early drop in swamp chestnut, you had a gold mine. Because they typically, I'd say November before they start really falling hard.
Yeah, and one thing about swamp chestnuts is they're incredibly variable on how productive they are. And it seems to not be as much from tree to tree, from what I've noticed, but it's like area to area. Around West Point and these bottom Tibby and Lion Creek and all of that, those things drop every year.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. But I can go to my farm, or a lot of other customers will tell me that their swamp chestnuts may not drop, but every, you know, 4 or 5 years. I've got some trees on my farm that I don't know if I've ever seen them drop before.
Wow.
You know, in that scenario, you talk about trying to thin out the unproductive trees. Mm-hmm. You might be checking that tree in a year when it's not dropping.
I would. If I had swamp chestnuts on my place, I would not be thinning any of them out. I wouldn't thin out.
How much he likes them.
I'm just saying, the chances are thin what's around them and give it some room, and it'll probably have a better chance at producing for you.
Yeah.
They're just such a – another thing is they're such a beautiful, stately
tree. They are a beautiful tree.
That's why the few hybrids of them that we found are kind of my favorites, along with the swamp chestnut. They're just such a beautiful – and I grew up
– We just love bottom ones so much, too. Right.
Where mossy oak came from, you know, in South Alabama, where I grew up hunting with Daddy, they were everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Can a turkey eat that big acorn?
Mostly not. But I've actually seen a wood duck with swamp chestnuts – choked all the way out to where the back of the throat had one in it. So I don't know. I'm sure turkeys can't eat them, but some of them really do get the size of golf
balls. And then you get further north, the swamp white oak kind of takes over, yeah. Quercus bicolor. Yeah. They seem to have similar site preferences. And talk about a precocious tree. It's not a hybrid.
What is precocious?
Precocious means it can produce acorns at a very young age. There was a professor, I can't pronounce his name, Coggeshall, out of University of Missouri, did a study with swamp whites, planted them all in rows. A lot of them were making acorns when they were 5 years old.
Yep.
Wow. That is precocious.
Yeah.
That's a winner.
Well, I think they survive cold weather better than our southern swamp chestnut.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's one reason why. But I noticed we've got some. What are the ones at the park? Those by Munders?
Yeah.
That's a white English oak?
A white English hybrid. Right. And the ones we collect from lean more towards the white than the English.
But they are beautiful trees. And they, of course, they're in the open. They're not irrigated, I don't think, but they get sunlight. And I mean, pound for pound, they drop so many acorns.
Yeah. My theory on that is a lot of the landscape type trees that get, planted in, college campuses and parks and things where they're grown in huge containers or balled in. They've been collecting these seeds from trees all over the U.S. You really don't even know where they come from.
Right.
And so it may have been a hybrid 7 or 8 generations ago, but you'll see subtle differences. You'll see that slightly longer acorn cup stem called a peduncle, which is indicative of an English oak.
Right.
Whatever reason, they sure do produce a lot.
They do.
They produce at a younger age. Yep. And that's what we collect most of our white oak from, is some of those landscape ones that we find.
So they make great landscape trees, some of the hybrids. Some of these red hybrids are incredible.
Yeah, fall color.
Yeah, and you can see especially looking at some of the water oak red hybrids, the leaves are so unique. Like they'll be like, all the lobes are on just one side.
Yeah. And people will call, they'll say, I ordered 10 water nut all oaks, and
they all
half
look different.
Of them
yeah.
look like, I think you sent me the wrong trees. And I have to explain that some of them lean towards the water oak, some to the nut all.
That's right.
And some are of, happy medium.
So let me ask two quick questions. And
good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So in y'all's experience, is there anything more important to the landscape than oaks as far as nourishing wildlife?
I'll answer that. I love oaks. I love planting oaks. I love having a lot of oaks at my farm. I like the natural ones.
Our company is called Mossy Oak.
Yeah.
I was going to bring that up at some point.
I don't think, they're not. The most important thing, and we're talking about wildlife, but it always ends up going back to deer. We're talking about deer management, turkeys, all of that.
I'm talking about deer.
Seeds, leaves, weeds, stuff that grows on the ground is more important overall than acorns.
Yes.
Acorns drop one time a year.
I don't think you can put one above the other.
You have to have
all of it. Diversity is the key. Mm-hmm. And, I think you're missing out greatly without oaks on your place. Yes. But is it the most important thing? I'm not sure what I could call as the single one most important, thing,
It'd be diversity.
A closed canopy stand of oaks that doesn't have any sunlight hitting the ground. Is a food desert for a good portion of the year. Yeah. It houses a lot of insects, birds.
Yeah, but
migratory birds are going through there eating little larvae.
When there is food there, it's not a variety of nutrition. It's just one thing.
But you need openings.
Yes.
You need cover. You need little thickets.
I'll guarantee you, you find a place like he's talking about, it's a big area of real mature oaks. All the fun stuff's going on right wherever it stops, that edge, Mm-hmm. You know, whether there's a cutover on the neighbor from that, or what, that's where the action's going to be right there. And they're going to be in that timber on that side of it, but they're going to be out there where there's some diversity and where some sunlight's hitting the ground too. So, you know, again, everything we talk about for the long run, food plots, seed, trees, plant, anything, property management, diversity, diversity,
but
diversity.
Where am I going to be on a March morning and early turkey season? I'm going to be down in some, my buddy Martin terms it vacuum cleaner hardwoods. Yes. You can see 300 yards in any direction.
Yeah.
That's where I want to be.
Yep.
So,
because I love them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So my second part to the question, and I feel like y'all have
another trick question.
Well, no, you've got me scared to ask this question because I know it's so site specific. But I was just going to ask if you're a guy and you're just thinking about deer, and don't throw anything at me, but I'm going to steer this back to deer for a minute.
It's okay, Bob.
If you had to pick three species of oaks to concentrate on your property, what would those be? Mm.
Where's the property?
Well, so
what state? You know, where's the property?
Yeah, what's the site look like?
Yeah.
What are the indicator species?
Yeah, we're going to say, let's just go with here, because it wouldn't be honest if Dudley answered for here and it's Illinois. So let's just make it here.
Well, can we do south and north? Can we generalize it like that?
Let's do here first.
All right.
You go.
Me? At my farm.
Only three?
In Holmes County, Mississippi.
For now, only three.
Top three.
If we can get through three, I'll be happy.
Let's go top three.
I would say, I'd probably say, do hybrids count?
Yes.
Okay. I'd probably say cherry bark oak. I've just always loved it. I would say Shumard oak.
Why?
Shumard oak drops late. It'll grow close to the bottom of the hill, all the way to the top. And then I would say Rainmaker oak, which is the overcup white cross.
Mm.
And there's a lot of close seconds. But, yeah, Shumard, overcup white, and cherry bark. I want to say nut all, but it's technically not a true nut all site. But
you're talking about your farm?
Yeah.
Yeah. And your farm is in central Mississippi.
It's in the Lurse Hills. It's not in the Delta. It's in that super hilly stuff right on the edge of the Delta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Lanny, what about you?
My three selections for I'll just tell you what I planted on my place. I planted swamp chestnut. I planted beetles. And I planted Compton oak. Now, I know I don't have a red oak species in there.
You probably have a ton of red oaks anyway.
I've got a ton of red oaks. So that's kind of where I was.
That Compton oak, I love it.
The Compton oak is absolutely the fastest growing, most beautiful tree I've ever planted. Now, it could be because of the site, I'm sure.
Well, they make acorns when they're young. They're beautiful.
I'll tell you, too, they're not all the same. Some will drop their leaves almost like a regular oak. Some keep them green like a live oak
almost into the spring. This one has green leaves almost all year.
They also vary in their drop time from tree to tree.
And some of them have very small, like turkey-sized acorns, and some of them drop big acorns. You know, they vary a lot. They're very, very. Yeah,
very, very. And so two of those were hybrids, Bobby, the Compton and the Beetles. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, Toxie, what about you?
I mean, there's upland sites and there's bottomland sites in our part of the world, but I'm going to say pick three. In general, I'm going all hybrids.
One hybrid, two hybrids, three hybrids.
For sure, Titan. That's where I'm going to get my swamp chestnut.
Yeah, that's your favorite.
That's a swamp chestnut overcup cross. And then I'm going to go Compton. Mm. And I'm going to do cherry water, but it could be cherry willow, either one of those.
Ooh, cherry willow.
I'm going to say cherry water. They seem to be a little more common.
Yeah.
But those would be my three. Then you've got ice cream, you've got, you know, small acorn sizes for different things. And so I'm going all hybrids.
That cherry bark water oak hybrid was probably my first hybrid I experimented with when I was a student at Mississippi State.
Right.
There's one on campus.
Right. right outside of the building there.
Don't be giving locations away.
Honestly, I saw it at a football game, and he was like, "What? You saw it too?"
Dudley, how do you walk through the woods with
his head up?
Well, I mean, how do you make time to get through?
He hits the top of his head on stuff a lot.
Yeah. I'm scared of snakes, so I do have to look down from time to time. But
it really is fascinating walking through a hardwood bottom just trying to figure out what everything is.
It's
not unlike finding, you know, wildlife tracks. When I was young, I'd find a wildlife track, and I'd be like, I want to know what that is. But the same thing's true with plants.
Being obsessed with trees definitely limits the amount of meat in my freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
I get busted all the time because I'm not looking at that level plane. I'm looking up.
Well, I've gone to pick up acorns from the nursery instead of hunting so many times. That just cost me that too. But do you think, I think, honestly, go back to my dad, you know, Mr. Fox, everybody knows about him, but he was so known as a woodsman amongst all his peers and all those guys that hunted and kind of a student of trees. And he loved every time he bought something that had open farmland, he'd put it back in trees. But following him, you know, my rite of passage wasn't sitting in a shooting house waiting for a deer to come out. It was squirrel hunting with daddy.
Yeah.
So it's like 6 years old. I've got a double barrel 20 gauge and I'm squirrel hunting. And so, you know, we hunt, we walk, he's talking, he's teaching, looking what they're dropping, different types of trees. And I mean, even at 6 years old, I knew the difference between a, you know, white oak and a red oak. And for the most part, although he would call, you know, some of the stuff, slang terms, everybody would call a willow oak a pin oak.
That vernacular.
But anyway, it just ingrained it in a very young age and that be a student of the trees. And then how, you know, you top a ridge with your dad slipping around and then like deer would just go everywhere and you walk over there. Well, guess what? There's a bunch of probably whatever swamp chestnuts or some kind of acorn on the ground there. And it connected me to it so early on. You know, and I hate to say that. I bet you some of the same thing ingrained it in you when you were young, too.
Oh, for sure.
Back
before deer hunting was so cool, all these kids were getting to walk around and look at
you can't change things because you're sad about them or complain your way back to, although a lot of the world's trying to protest and complain their way back into things happening. But I do wish, you know, kids would spend more time learning and being woodsmen as much opposed to just like sitting there waiting on something to happen. You know?
This is kind of random, but it'd be cool if some of these public land areas would have like a week-long squirrel season. Just so parents and kids and stuff can actually go out squirrel hunting without fear of, you know.
And I love deer hunting. Look, don't get me wrong. I love all this.
Yes,
but I'm just saying with the kids today, just add that to what they do, you know, if you can. And then conversely, you know, buy a few trees and plant them with your kids every year because they are really get to experience something special, even if you don't.
Yeah, Mac.
That's right.
Sent me some pictures the other day of him and Wilkes planting a tree.
So I've got my first grandson now, Baby Toxie.
Yeah.
My son, Neil.
What kind of tree are y'all going to plant?
You know, on National Day of Conservation, he posted a picture and they planted a tree together.
Right.
He's like 8 months old then, eight and a half, I guess. And that's what he did that day. And it just gave me chill bumps.
All the trees I planted in my house were when Hayden was one, so they're 10 years old.
Well, if you look at the other thing, my granddaughter, you know, there was a picture posted for Moss Hill Properties. It's Evie planting a tree with me. We're doing that. And as they get older, don't just like, you know, symbolically do it. Take them out with you and let them, you know.
Get your hands dirty.
We had a great day like last year, I think it was, Daniel. We had some trees left over from a film shoot, and I said, let's go plant them. And we went and planted a dozen and a half maybe, put the tubes on them, did all that together. And he was 30 years old then. And we were just like two, like daddy and his son doing something together, you know.
Yeah. I think about 10 years ago, I killed a doe out of a tree that I planted when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. That's pretty killer.
No, that's cool.
I hung a stand in the tree.
Now, see, that's why people should be doing stuff like this. Now, that is that's not like a one-year deal. That's a lifetime thing. I remember calling a turkey up for daddy, and he was sitting with his back to a pine tree that he planted.
Ah.
That was cool.
Yeah. I know this was a fun discussion.
Yes.
We kind of rambled and, you know, so maybe in the future we can do some more targeted discussion.
Yeah. Y'all talk to us out there. Let us know what you want to hear more about on the subject of trees, because we love them.
But this podcast was kind of what happens in the office when we just
especially
get on a tangent. Yeah. Me and Toxie just rambling. So this is special to me.
Yeah,
for sure.
This was like an hour and a half glimpse into our office building.
Cut us off about 10 times.
ADHD discussion.
Yeah. Well, it is definitely.
You two go, and Lanny's on his laptop doing something with the website for sure. Richie's over here napping. it's classic, a glimpse into the office.
Here it is.
But this really has been interesting. You guys could go all day talking about this. I think we only just scratched the surface.
I'm just saying, if you hadn't gotten involved in planting trees, please give it a shot. Make it part of it. It's a sport, just like bow hunting or golf or tennis or whatever. Add it to your arsenal of things you're doing in life with your family.
Yeah. Well, look, we've been going for about an hour and a half. I kind of think that we've probably done enough. Yeah. But Lanny, have you got a question?
Well, I just want to know if you learned anything. What did you learn today?
You know, Bobby? I learned a lot today. I've been making notes the whole time.
Other than what precocious means.
Well, yeah. Well, so I learned about the difference in the white and the red oak.
All right.
And the white oak has acorns every year, and the red oak makes acorns every year, but only drops them every 18 months, basically.
They can still drop every year.
Right. But they're two-year-old acorns.
You just have two sets on the tree at the same time.
Yeah, right. So I kind of I got a better handle on that, Lanny.
Just like if everybody's saying, look at this massive acorn crop this year because of all the rain all summer, and look at the number of acorns my red oaks have. Well, guess what? That had nothing to do with it. It may have survived a few more, but next year I would be surprised if we don't have a tremendous red oak acorn crop. Given decent, growing conditions.
Look, we've had so much rain. It'll be interesting to see how
we're gonna have some acorns. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, before we leave, Toxie, I have a trivia question.
Do we have an Ask Dudley?
I couldn't take an Ask Dudley after all that.
This whole show was labeled Ask Dudley.
All right. What's the trivia?
All right. So this one, Toxie, you love good music. You've always been a fan of good music. You can't deny that.
Yeah, but I get to decide if it's good or not. So
I'm going to give you one question. Would you rather go in a trivia question from the 70s or from the 80s? 70s. Okay. Here we go with a good one.
Every time.
With a good one. All right. In 1977, Michael McDonald replaced Tom Johnstone in what band?
Doobie Brothers.
There you go.
Yeah, he nailed it.
How about that?
I'm sorry.
Myself wait until you got finished.
You were ready for that one.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, that's it. Congratulations. You win the big prize.
He won a moon pie, didn't he?
He won a moon pie. All right, guys. Well, look, what else do we need to do? Mac, is there anything we need to close out with? We good?
Is Richie away?
Yeah, now that we're closing out, he sits up. So, look, Toxie, we enjoyed you being here. We hope you come back. We missed you last week.
Plant a tree and watch it grow.
Yeah, that's it. So, guys, hey, check out the Gamekeeper Television Show on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time. Lanny, have you got anything? You look like you were whispering to me there.
I was going to whisper Native Nurseries.
Y'all check it out at nativenurseries.com. And go watch Dudley's videos. They're really good.
We're going to do more soon, too.
Yeah, we do.
We love you, and we appreciate the love that you have for oaks and wildlife. And this show was all about your knowledge, and we'll do this again.
That was fun. Knowledge, I don't like that word, but I enjoy it.
It's because, the smartest thing in the world is humility, which means I'm always learning still.
Yeah. All right. Well, say goodbye, Dudley.
Goodbye, Dudley.
Get us out of here, Mac.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Gamekeeper Podcast. And be sure to tune in again. Subscribe to Gamekeeper Farming for Wildlife Magazine. And don't miss the Mossy Oak Properties Fistful of Dirt Podcast with my good buddy, Ronnie Cuz Strickland.